Parshat Vayelech. There is an incredible woman. She's really a very special person. She's a Holocaust survivor. Her name is Miriam Waldman. And she graciously agreed to come here a few years ago. She's the grandmother of one of our alumni, Jonah Waldman, who is now at Penn. I think he's a senior. And when she came to speak, it was incredible what she had. Her story is really remarkable. And it was so amazing. We asked her if she would come back the next year, and she did. And the first year she came, I saw a familiar face. I was somewhat surprised. He was a guy who used to be my dentist many years ago. I lived near my parents, Jonah's uncle, Stephen, her son. And so I got really connected to them. And then during her story, she mentioned a name that I recognized. They came from Belgium, I believe. And her maiden name was Dirdak. And I knew I had Dirdak in my family tree. So I told them, like, could it be, whatever. And she did a little research and, you know, found out, her daughter found out. They were actually third cousins. So I found a long-lost cousin. And she's come a few times to write. They're really remarkable. And a Holocaust survivor, not a young woman, really amazing, amazing lady with a lot of energy. And I got the most horrendous call yesterday. Her son, who was a young guy, just suddenly passed away. He was nifter yesterday. I've been so crazy today. I don't know. I think the Levaya was today, possibly tomorrow. It's hard for us to imagine what it is for someone who survived the Holocaust to suffer a loss like that. And her son sent me a WhatsApp, could I call her? Of course, you know, I called her, and there are no words. So I asked if I could dedicate this year in his memory, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to learn tonight, Le'ilui Nishmat, Alexander Meir ben Simcha Ruvain. It should be in Le'ilui L'Neshama. It should give her and her family comfort, Nechama. Bezrat Hashem, we should all know Bezrat Tovot. So Parshat Vayelech, and you'll see that this topic really fits this. So Parshat Vayelech. You know, a week ago we talked about Parshat Nitzavim. And we said that it's strange that the Torah tells us we're standing still. And we talked about the idea that when you stand still, it gives you opportunity to pause. But the standing still, the pause, thinking about the goals, it's thinking about where you want to go. So it makes sense that this week's Parsha is Vayelech. Vayelech. And if you look at this Parsha, there is an obvious question. And I remember one of the most difficult phenomena that you experience in the army, Israeli army, is this uncertainty of whether life can change in a moment. You never know what's coming. You never know when your phone's going to ring and there's going to be some alert and you have to stop what you're doing. You know? Especially during wartime. You know, if you're a company commander, everything you do, I have a vivid memory. I was sitting beginning of the second intifada. We had a horrendous, horrendous week. It was this week, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, the second intifada in the year 2000 broke out on Rosh Hashanah, not accidental. Tzom Gedalia, the night after the fast, I get a call about 1 in the morning from my magad, from my battalion commander. He says, listen, we just got a Tzav Shmoneh. Tzav Shmoneh is a special law that they have in the Knesset, that a special subcommittee in the Knesset can decide to call up the reserves. Normally, in order to go to do the reserves, you have to be given a certain amount of notice. If you didn't get notice in the mail 40 days before your reserve duty, you can refuse to go. They have to send you notice, and they have to tell you where you're going and how long you're going. There are rules to this. So I had never experienced this, certainly in the reserves. All of a sudden, we're being called up. Right? This was the second intifada, Molotov cocktail shootings, terrible terrorism all over the country. They realized they needed the reserves. So they called up the reserves, and we got called up. I'd never experienced this, so I said to my God, well, when do we have to be there? He said, now. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm not going to share with you the whole story of how I switched units, and we had to create this special unit for needs that are beyond the scope of this discussion. But our positions were basically around the Frat, opposite El Chader, Bet Lechem, whatever. Okay, how long are we going to be in for? I don't know. I never had that experience. You're in the middle of life. You're married, you have kids, you have projects, you're at work, you have classes to give, you have a teacher's meeting to go to, you have a paper you want to write, whatever it is, it all gets put in a drawer. Off you go, you grab your gear. Within 3 hours, 97% of my unit was already in positions. It turned out much later that this was But this was very good that they did that. We actually, about 3 months later, they caught a terrorist cell in Beit Lechem that had been watching Efrat. And they had bus maps, they had addresses of the community center, and unbelievable. They were planning a pigua, and they saw all of the Israeli troops sort of stationed and guarding and doing whatever we were doing in the northern end of Efrat and around Efrat, and that's why they called it off, that's what we think, so that worked. It was a crazy week. Now, we didn't know. We thought this would be like, you know, the tunnel riots in 96, which lasted about a week. It was a terrible experience. There were, I think, some 11 soldiers that were killed. One of them was from Efrat. But we had no idea how long this was going to be. I got stuck in the army for 6 weeks. I did over 80 days of reserve duty that year. Turned my life upside down. But of all the terrible stories and the memories, one of the ones that sticks with me is Motzei Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, we didn't know what to do. I'd been in two gun battles. You have to understand, you're on the edge of your home. Like you're doing, you know, sort of whatever it is you're doing opposite Beit Lechem, which is 10 minutes from Efrat. And one of the gun battles we got into that week was on a hill that was overlooking Efrat. So it was a bizarre kind of reserve duty because you're fighting a war on the one hand, on the other hand, you're right next to your house. So you would sometimes manage to get home for a couple hours, put the kids to sleep, and then run back to what was crazy. But this was probably the worst. It was Motzei Yom Kippur. We were sitting down to Sidon Rav Seket. We had had a dilemma, what we should do. A rite that didn't exist then, so I was back then I was in Efrat, and I was a Baal Tefillah. I used to daven Musaf. And in our show. And we weren't sure what we should do because I was the company commander and I had my MIRS radio and my regular radio and my cell phone that they needed if they'd call me. And another way, and I got all this gear. And you know, Davin Musaf and a kittel. So one of my first sergeants actually is a guy who also lives on my block. And he was with us in the show and we weren't sure what to do. Should I Davin Musaf, should I not? So he said, look, I'll take all your radios. If they go off in the middle, so then I'll come get you and we'll switch you. So that sounded like a good plan. The whole day, nothing. It's almost like a Kosh Baruch Hu decided to break. We were sure it was done. We thought it calmed down. They figured out how to deal with it, whatever. Yom Kippur ends. We were all so happy that things were calm. We hadn't been cold. We hadn't had to. We were still in uniform. I davened with a kittel over my uniform, but Baruch Hashem. Get home that night. I was sitting in the, you know, in our dining room table. I remember I was literally in the middle of a raisin bagel, and all my radios go off. The MIRS goes off, and the cell phone goes off, everything goes off. And I look at the message, and there's shooting in the northern tip of Dagan, and we have to get out there in a hurry. My Jeep was parked next to the house. So you do what you always do in reserve duty. You grab your gear, which was by the door, and you run out the door. I had never been in a situation like this. I'd never been on reserve duty, but at home. That never happened to me. So you do what you always do. Never occurred to me what that did to my kids. To see their dad grab all his gear, his vest and his webbing and his rifle and his helmet and just run out, and they heard the engine roar of the Jeep and off we go. And there was a terrible gun battle that took place opposite Dagan, and there was a terrorist cell in Beit Lechem. In the end we had to call in helicopter support and they had a Cobra and it was literally over Efrat flying into Beit Lechem. And since my children knew that I was the company commander, they knew I was in the middle. They had no idea what was going on, and I didn't realize that they were even thinking that. That's called a hakpatza. You know, you're in the middle of total chill, and all of a sudden, kpatsta! And everybody grabs their gear and runs. I remember we were in basic training. They used to play a game with us. They wanted to teach us that when you're in the land of green, you just never know. You have to constantly in your mind think it could happen any moment. You know, you're on patrol in Lebanon. You know what they teach you as an officer? You're on a patrol in Lebanon or wherever. And you have to constantly think to yourself, well, what would happen if it happened now? Like, if it happened now, what do I think it would be? So you say, well, you know what? If I was a terrorist and I was attacking our unit now, I'd be behind that ridge. Well, if we got attacked right now, what would I do? So you say, well, you know what? That's a good ditch over there. I'd take cover in the ditch, and I'd send my cover fire position over to that mound over there. Then you walk 50 yards. Well, you can't run back to the ditch if it happens now. So you say, okay, I'd lay cover down, lay cover fire, suppressing fire down from those trees, and I'd take cover over there, and we do a pincer. That's what you think. And why do you do this? Because if it actually happens, then you've already thought through what you're going to do. So you just scream out, Nitzkal, and everybody hits the ground, and you're already yelling to your koch rete, you know, Svika mimkumcha, vayimeta mismol, your place is over there, whatever, and fine. And that's how you compute. And you get so used to this that you forget what it does to you. It creates this this sort of quiet tension in the back of your head. We're sitting here now in a Beis Medrash, learning Torah or about to learn Torah. And who here thinks that in a moment something could explode, we could have to run? We don't think that way. Because you grow up healthy. You shouldn't have to think that way. That's what a Hakbatzah is. When we were in basic training, they wanted to train us to do this. So a sergeant, they finally give us a break. We'd be sitting there, they'd give us lunch. A sergeant would walk by, and he'd have a Coke can, finish his Coke. He'd look at someone, and he'd throw the Coke can. And he'd say in a very quiet voice, Rimon. Like, not like, Rimon! Which means grenade. Rimon. Right? And you wouldn't get it at first. Just like if a real grenade fell, nobody's yelling Rimon. You just would look at a grenade and not realize it. And what you had to do, if you didn't want to get sort of stuck for Shabbat or extra hours of guard duty, is you had to scream Rimon! And run. And everybody, and this happened all the time. This stuff, all you never knew when you were sitting. You would eat fast, because what if in a minute they throw a Coke can? And you think the whole thing is ridiculous until later you experience it. Now, why do I tell you all this? Because the beginning of this part is strange. Vayelech Moshe. Moshe goes. Vayidaber et advarim ha'elel kol Yisrael. And he says all of the following to Bnei Yisrael. What is the obvious question here? Should I read the pasuk again?
Where does he go?
Where does he go? Vayelech Moshe. Where does he go? Lehechan halach. The Or HaChaim quotes Chazal. Where does Moshe Rabbeinu go? Now, what is Moshe Rabbeinu saying here? This is a painful parsha. Listen to this pasuk. Vayelech Moshe. Vayidaber et advarim ha'ele al kol Yisrael. Moshe goes and says all of these words to the entire Jewish people. Fayomer alayhem, he says to them. By the way, in order to speak to the entire Jewish people, he has to have gathered them together. He doesn't have a microphone. That's one of the hidden nisim mistarim, but we're not going to go there right now. Right? Fayomer alayhem ben me'av eslim shana anochi hayom. I am 120 years today. By the way, how old is Moshe when he dies?
120.
So what is this day? Death day. It's actually not. It's actually 40 days before his death, according to Chazal. It's an interesting question why he says, today I'm 120. Some say there's a powerful Or HaChaim, which I'll get to in a second, but it's a question, but okay. So what is he describing here? I'm about to die. Lo uchal od latzeit v'lavon. I can't come and go anymore. Now, if you're some guy who doesn't know Torah, doesn't know Chazal, doesn't get it, you read this pasuk, you think Moshe is saying, you know, I'm 120 today and I can't get up there, can't do the dunk anymore. That's obviously not what it says. In fact, if you read the psukim surrounding this, he fights Og Melech HaBashan, he climbs up Har Nevo, which, you know, when the rabbis have Moshe climbing a mountain, oh my gosh, it's such a mountain, and he takes one leap and he's whatever, you know, a scale. Moshe Rabbeinu there's a whole discussion. Moshe Rabbeinu has the strength of a young man. And by the way, that is not just an allegory. If you read the biography of the Chafetz Chaim by his son, he has an incredible paragraph. He says that his father basically never got sick. But when he got older, he became weaker. And it became difficult for him. And he would seem very frail until he started giving a shiur. And when he started to give a shiur, I witnessed this twice in my life. I saw Rav Moshe Feinstein. I saw this. I saw an old man bent over and frail, give a shiur, and by the time he was in the middle of a shiur, he was like on fire. And then when he finished, he was exhausted. Right? Leadership gives you strength. Passion gives you strength. Purpose gives you strength. Moshe Rabbeinu epitomized that. Right? Show me two people who are in the same moment, and one of them is so excited, is so filled with purpose, it doesn't matter. He just has more energy. He has more strength. And you can do this. You can psych yourself. You can fill yourself with purpose and inspiration, and it will give you strength. Okay. So it can't be that lo uchal od latzeit v'lavo means that he couldn't walk. So does anybody know what it means? Listen to this. This is Rashi. Yachol tashash kocho. Maybe you would think this means Moshe Rabbeinu got weaker. Talmud lomar lo ka'atai no v'lo naslecho. Moshe's eyesight didn't dim and his strength didn't weaken. He was a powerhouse. Elamahu. So what does it mean? Lo uchal atek v'lavo. I can't come and go anymore. Lo uchal eini rashai. I'm not allowed. Shenitla mimeni harishut v'nitna li Yoshua. I have been told by God that I can't do this anymore. Now, what's Moshe referring to? Pardon? I can no longer be your leader. I can no longer, I'm not allowed to, what? Enter Eretz Israel. I'm not the leader. Who's the leader? Who's the leader? Pardon? Well, Hashem's always the leader, that's true. No, who's the leader? Who's taking Moshe's place? Yoshua. And in fact, if you look carefully in the Sukkim, right? Pasuk Gimel here, right? Pasuk says, Vayikra Moshe Yoshua, this is Pasuk Zayin, sorry. Vayomer Lev Leinei Kol Yisrael. So the same Kol Yisrael the entire Jewish people is speaking to, he's still speaking to, or in front of, right? Chazak ve'ematz, be of strength, be of courage. We don't have the time, but that's an interesting description. Ki ata tavo et ha'am hazeh. You will bring this people el ha'aretz she'nishba Hashem la'avotav latet lahem. You will lead them in. I can't do it. You will lead them in. So that's an interesting question. Why does Moshe have to say this? And what does it mean, vayelech Moshe? Where is he going? Okay. So, Moshe goes. It's not clear where he goes. Moshe tells them, I'm going to die. So, maybe you would think that Vayelech means he's going to die. Anybody want to suggest a problem with that? Anybody?
40 days.
Pardon? Okay, one possibility is 40 days. But no, you could say that a person says, I'm going to die 40 days before. By the way, you want to hear something chilling? This is chilling. This is the Or HaChaim. The Or HaChaim notices this, and he says, he quotes the Gemara that says, "Ki arba'im yom." Sorry, it's a Medrash. Ki arba'im yom. Well, first of all, he says, "Lahechan alach." Hamefarshim amru shalach mi machane leviya lemachane Israel ki adam aniftar michavero. He lived in the Levite camp, right? Because he was a Levi, and he went to the Jewish people to say goodbye. When you leave someone, you go say goodbye. Okay, but he asked the question that we asked before. He wasn't 120 that day. This is the beginning of Vayelech. You still have Zazin, Zosa Bracha. It's 40 days. Right? So why does it say, Ki arba'im yom kodem aptira nishmata adam olechet mimen. 40 days before a person dies, he begins to sense his death. And one of the ways in which a person senses their death, there's one Gemara that says 30 days, one Gemara that says 40 days, I'm not going to get into the difference, is that he feels that his will, his ratzan, is weakening. There was a fellow by the name Har Shoshanim. He was a katzin in Pasad Tzanchanim, in a very elite unit in the paratroopers, and he was killed in a mission many years ago. And I was in Camp Moshavah, so you're talking about, gosh, at least 20 years ago. And his family came. They had this whole Chesed project. You can look up the name Har Shoshanim. Maybe you guys from IO still remember this. And they came to speak, and they told some of the stories about him, and they were promoting this project. And at one point, they told a story that about a month before he was killed, he got out for Shabbat and he was home. And he and his brother were home, and they were both in the army, or one of them was done in the army, I don't remember. And they were joking about, like, you know, if you bought it, how would you buy it, and what would you die? And he said, when I get it, it's going to be right here. That's what he said. And his mother got very annoyed at him. Don't say that. Don't say that. Don't put it in. How could you say such a thing? And he's laughed. He said, it's okay. I'll take that kid. Don't worry. Kol yatov. Everything will be good. That's what he said. And he was mukbatz and he had to go. And that was his last Shabbat at home. And he was in an armored personnel carrier. And they were on a complicated mission. And he got hit by a sniper right here. Right on the side of his head. And that's where he was killed. And at his funeral, one of the rabbanim said, sometimes a person can sense. You're given the gift of knowing that something's coming. Right? I had this experience with a friend of mine, Dani Moshe. It's a very similar story. So Moshe Rabbeinu knows what's coming. He's a Navi. I don't know why that's a Chakira, but okay. But listen to this. This is an unbelievable idea. Right? Vayelech Moshe. And Moshe goes. So Moshe goes to say goodbye. Moshe says, I'm dying. How do we know it's a strange language? Because what does the Torah say? What does the Torah say when someone dies? Anybody know how it describes that Miriam's going to die? She says, Vatamat Miriam. She dies. What does it mean, Vayelech? So I'm going to tell you an interesting idea. It comes from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein has an amazing sefer. It's called the Darash Moshe, or in their world, the Darash Moshe. Right? And he has Shiurim on the Parsha, Shiurim on Rosh Hashanah, on Yom Kippur, on the Yom Tovim. Amazing Drashos on Gemara. And on this particular question, he says the following. What's the difference between when it says a person left and when it says a person finished? A person leaves, it's a bit of a surprise because he's not finished. You know, it's the middle of the day, and you want to know, I don't know, where's Seth? Right? Oh, Seth had to leave. So what does that mean, Seth had to leave? You wouldn't say Seth had to leave at 1 o'clock in the morning on Thursday, because the day's over. 2 o'clock in the afternoon, okay, he had a bar mitzvah, he had something. What does it mean he had to leave? It means he wasn't finished what he was doing. He had to go do something else. Says Moshe Feinstein, Moshe Rabbeinu had not finished. That's what the word Vayelech means. What does it mean that Moshe hadn't finished? Moshe has a job to do. And he's not done yet. He shouldn't be done yet because he hasn't brought us home. We're not in Eretz Yisrael yet. So Moshe's leaving before he's done. So therefore Moshe explains, why am I leaving before I'm done? Lo uchav od latzeit v'levo. I'm leaving before I'm done because Hashem has told me that this is when I have to leave. And I want to tell you that there are two lessons to this, right? The first lesson is to be able to hear what it is Hashem wants of me. You know, sometimes you have a plan, and you think you know what you want. And things come along, and you start to realize it's not going the way you want to. It's just not working. And one of the questions is, are you really listening? Do you hear that maybe Hashem has a different plan? Maybe Hashem wants you to go somewhere else. Vayelech Moshe, Moshe lived his life as an Eved Hashem. His journey was the journey that Hashem wanted of him. Do we hear that message? You know? I remember there was a boy here. And he really struggled. He had gotten into a college. I gave him a hard time by going to this particular college. I'm not going to mention more because it'll be obvious who I'm talking about. I don't think he would mind because it's Lishiv Cho, but nonetheless, it's just not for him to keep it a mess up. But he was going to a college. I was very nervous about him going to this college. I gave him a really hard time. Right? And about halfway through the year, I saw that he was going to go to this college. So I said, okay, you know what? If you go to this college, then you're not ready for it. It's a Jewish desert. Stay Shanabet. Now, I don't usually push kids to stay Shanabet. As much as I joke about it, you'll see that that's true. I think everybody has to choose their path. You have to know what your options are in life. It's not for everybody, and that's fine. But this boy going to that university, you need to stay Shanabet. And to be honest, I wasn't being totally honest because I said, if he stays Shanabet, I'm going to work on him next year to try not to go to the college. Okay. So he decided to stay Shanabet. And I went to work on him, and I'm not good at this type of thing. I'm good at sharing. I'm not really good at convincing. It's not really what my energy is. Again, after a few months, I realized, you know. So he finally decided, you know what? I'm going to apply to a different school. He's going to apply to a different school, an Ivy League school, whatever, New York area. Better Jewish community, stronger Jewish community. Okay. And he decided he would go there. There were guys going there, whatever. I don't know if he got excited about it or he realized. So he applied and he did everything he had to do. And then he got rejected. So he comes to me one day and goes, listen, Rabbi, I did my bit. I got rejected. I'm not saying Shana Gimel. I said, okay, you know what? Maybe Hashem wants you to go to this university. You got to figure out what it is Hashem wants of you. I'm sure Hashem doesn't want you to go to the university to take off your kippah. So prove me wrong. And that is exactly what he did. He spent the next 4 years on this campus, completely transformed the Jewish community in this campus. Had an enormous impact. And I won't mention his name, but anybody who went to that university in those years knows that name. He was a force on campus. He figured out, to now, this is where Hashem wants me to go. This is where Hashem wants me to go. You know? Sometimes life takes you in a different direction. You date a girl. It's not just you're in Baba Kama and she's in Baba Basra. I mean, you're in Yerushalmi and Chagiga in Perak Aleph and she's studying Perak Bet. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. You study your first piece of Zohar, you walk into a restaurant, she's studying the second piece. Unbelievable. You know? You say Noam, she says Ali Melech. It can't get better. It's incredible. And you're sure that she's the yin to your yang. And you date her for 3-4 months, and you're starting to think about how you're going to ask her, and what are you going to tell your parents? And you show up, and you plan this fancy dinner, and she comes to the dinner, and she says, look, I got to be honest with you, I met another guy. And you're broken. You are so broken. You can't even look at Yerushalmi for a year. Like, how could this happen? You know what just happened? Kadosh Baruch Hu told you, this isn't it. Now, if we really had emunah, if we really understood that that's what Hashem wants, when that happens, and you could debate, how do I know when that's what Hashem is telling me? You know, look, I got thrown out of, I went through basic training, tank school, field tank school training, then I went to Sergeant's Commander's course, then I got invited to Hachanale Korsanim to do a month to prepare to try to get into Korsanim. There were 250 of us, 80 of us got in. Then I got into Barichad. I spent, 4.5 months in Barichad doing infantry officer training. Then I went to tank officer training. At the end of tank officer, he's talking about all these months, almost a year, of just of officer school. 3 days before they finished officer school, they told me they didn't feel in all good conscience that I was worthy to lead men into battle. I wasn't Mishuf Shaf, I don't know the right word for that. I wasn't sharp, my Hebrew wasn't sharp enough, my commands weren't sharp enough, I just wasn't tight enough. And they told me I had to leave. Can you imagine? Everybody else had come back to the field, they were giving back their gear, they were practicing, you know, marching for the tekkes for the final ceremony. My parents had a flight booked to come, the end of officer's course, at the call of my parents and tell them, I think maybe you shouldn't come. They had given us our bars that we were supposed to put on the next day but cover them up with tape so that they would be there ready for the ceremony. And I'm out of the base. But they said to me, because the only reason you fell was because you're a Chayal Boded and you're an American, whatever. If you want to, you could do the whole course again. Thank you very much. Whole course again. They never let you do the course again. They were going to let me do the course again. But I had to do it all over again from the beginning. So what's the obvious question you have to ask them? What does the Kadosh Baruch Hu want of me? And it was the longest week. I remember they said you can go. But it was 8 o'clock at night and I'm in the base in the middle of the desert. It wasn't even the middle of the desert. The middle of the desert, then turn left. In the middle of nowhere. There's a committee that finds these places. She's a phone. And I walked about 2 miles with all my gear outside of the base because I couldn't bear to be on the base when everybody's excited and getting ready for the end. It was terrible. And I stood on this road in the middle of the desert under the night sky in front of the base. It's all over. I wasted 9 months. Never going to be an officer. I waited about 6.5, 7 hours. At 4 in the morning, finally a truck came by and took me. Most depressing night I could possibly imagine. The whole point, what am I asking them? What's the Kadosh Baruch Hu want of me? They told me that if I decide I want to come back, the next course starts on Monday. I have the weekend to decide. So that's a tough question. Where's the Kadosh Baruch Hu? How do you know? How do you know what the Kadosh Baruch Hu wants of you? So forget about how I made whatever decision I made. I didn't want to look back the rest of my life and think I should have tried. So I went back. And the second time it worked out better because I knew it already. Ma Hashem shoel mimach. What is Hashem asking? Moshe Rabbeinu says, I can't fully explain why I'm not taking you home. I can't fully explain. You think it's tough to fall out of Christianity after 9 months? 40 years! 40 years he led them in the desert. Can you imagine? You haven't lived that long. As long as you've lived now, do it again, and then wait a couple years, and then Hashem says, no, you're not graduating. Unbelievable. Vayelech Moshe. If this is what you want of me, this is what I'm going to do. That's the definition. Ki b'chol beiti ne'eman hu. No person was ever as ne'eman. What does ne'eman mean? It's the same shorash as emunan. To believe in a Kadosh Baruch Hu means that if you think Hashem is telling you something, then you can accept it, whatever it is. Now, I'm not talking about how you know what Hashem's telling you. That's complicated. But sometimes you know. It's hard to hear, but you know. If she got engaged to someone else, then you know. If she got married to someone else, for sure you know. Unless you're creepy. Right? You know.
Can you accept it? Can you accept it with a smile? Can you rejoice in the fact that for whatever the reason Hashem decided that would be a mistake, and you're blessed that you didn't make the mistake? That's the first message of Vayelech. If a Kadosh Baruch Hu tells me, you know what the second message is? The second message is, in any moment, you could find out that your mission changed. There was only this moment. The past is gone. There's a lot to learn from it, but it's gone. The future isn't here yet. There was just now. And if right now it all changes, then be open to how it all changes. There's so many implications to this message. So many. You know? You want to stay Shanabet, and you find out, you know what, for whatever the reason, it's not working out. I don't know, the college you were going to defer to says no. Your parents, or whatever you think. Sometimes the answer is no. You know? You're all set because you're going to go to university, and dafka the opposite. You think you should stay Shanabet. And the message seems to be, I could grow so much more. This is not a pitch for Shanabet. It's right for somebody, and it's not right for somebody else. You know? Whatever it is. You're in the moments in your life where you're starting to think about, where is my life headed? What is my Vayelech? What is Hashem asking of me? It's not an accident this year that we're reading this parsha right before Yom Kippur. Ki lifnei mi atem metarim u mi metar etchem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu avinu shebashamayim. Hashem gives us the ability to be pure, to clean up, to be better. We just have to hear what Hashem is asking of us. And that's the secret message of Parshat Vayelech. There are many, many more messages in this parsha, but this will suffice for now. I just want to wish everybody, first of all, I want to tell the Waldman family, if they end up listening to this, that their life just took a really different turn. This happens sometimes. There are people in this room who've had that challenge. So Hashem wants something different. We don't get it. This world is this fast. And if you believe, and I certainly do, that this world is temporary, that the reality of who we are, who we really are, is not the physical us, but the neshama that is us. That neshama doesn't end. You know, the bracha of Tchiyat Amitim means that we're all going to find each other's neshamot and ritzonot and wills. You know, so maybe temporarily we're separated in certain ways, but it's only temporary. And that means that Hashem wants something different from us. You know? Reality just changed. To the degree that we're able to hear that, we will live a different life. It's a very hard thing to do. And our job is not to tell others how to do it. Our job is just to be there for people in pain. Imo anochi v'tzara. Your job is not to go to a cancer ward and say, I guess Hashem is telling you something else. That's not our job. Somebody's struggling, suffering, got to be there for them. But for ourselves, when we get those messages, well, that's worth asking. So Yehi Ratzon, we should have an awesome Shabbat and a meaningful Yom Kippur, which will help us to begin an incredible year. Shana Tova and Shabbat Shalom.